Welcome to only the second episode of The War's Den. And what exactly is The War's Den? Well, just me talking to you guys directly. No guests, no other voices, just me. So hopefully you don't get bored. It is a beautiful Saturday, February 25th, here in the beautiful, very bright, kind of sunny out there with a bit of blue skies, New York City. And hopefully you guys are out there, or went out there today and got a chance to enjoy the weather. It's beautiful out there. Yes, it is February. It's hard to believe that we're still in winter, but it really does not look nor feel like February outside. So global warming, I think, is a real thing. No, I've come to believe that it's truly an existing factor, and that Trump is completely insane, and anybody else who doesn't believe that is also insane. But furthermore, just a couple of things I thought that were interesting happening during the week. Some of it is news to me, but old for other people. As I give a quick shout out to my mom for updating me about some science things that came into life. But first, I have to talk about the NBA All-Star Game. I don't know if many of you are basketball fans and got a chance to watch the NBA All-Star Game, or if you ever have before. Maybe this is your first year. Yeah, it was terrible. I think every year for the past 3 or 4 years, the NBA All-Star Game has become more and more over-star-studded and packed show, a program of the NBA's brightest stars performing their skills, basically. Really, to no point. I mean, yes, there's a skills challenge, which if you win that, I guess some money gets donated somewhere. 3-point contest, I think, is the same setup. But in the end, it doesn't matter. I mean, especially when it comes to the actual All-Star game, it really doesn't matter. Whoever wins doesn't add anything to the conference, which is why just this past Sunday, during the All-Star game, we had a finishing game between the East and the Western Conference. I think of like 193 or 183 to 173. That's ridiculous. That's NBA 2K numbers. And in the least, in NBA 2K, you're playing for a purpose. You're like playing to try to show up your friend to show him how bad he is at video games, or you're trying to do what a lot of people have been doing lately, which is playing online and playing on these virtual teams for the benefit of moving up in the rankings and getting a shot at $100,000, which is a real thing. Or you play the franchise mode or the my career mode. But the point is that there's a purpose, right? That you're not just doing this to showcase skills. And it kind of just felt like people, I mean, honestly, I feel bad for people who paid for these tickets to go to the NBA All-Star game to kind of see players not play D, just run up and down the court dunking and kind of letting each other score, basically. There was very little attempts to prevent a score, hence why this the high scoring in the end of the game. And it's pretty disturbing. And I feel like it just takes away from what the sport means. And Reggie Miller was quoted during an interview, actually, with, I believe it was, not Bill Simmons. I'm trying to remember who he was being interviewed by, but it was a pretty prominent gentleman on radio, sports radio, who did the interview. And Reggie Miller said it flat out. He says, you know, it's kind of disrespectful to the game. Just watching how things have progressed with the NBA All-Star game the past several years, it seems, you know, and he made a very valid point when he mentioned how the younger kids are watching this, you know, new generation of athletes. And they're seeing these guys have this mentality of just dunking the ball, shooting threes halfway across the court, doing things that they would never do in an actual game. And these people who are playing in the All-Star game are supposed to represent the best of the best as far as the NBA has to offer or has to offer. And, you know, I just feel like why should anyone be willing to pay, you know, thousands of dollars? And if you're an all-star, a megastar or a superstar, as far as celebrity, rather, then You're paying, tens of thousands of dollars just to sit front row to watch this. It doesn't mean anything. So I'm sending this out to Adam Silver, who's the new commissioner of the NBA. And I'm pretty sure a lot of fans have the same opinion. We need to find a way to make the All-Star game worth watching, where it doesn't just feel like we're watching an NBA 2K, real life game play, but we're watching two conferences with the best players in their conference playing against each other for the goal of some type of outcome advantage in the NBA Finals. I think that would make the game so much more competitive and also really showcase amongst the players who's the better player, who's the best defender, who's the best scorer. LeBron James is lauded as the greatest player to ever play the game. But let's be realistic. I mean, and people can make comments about this, but when he goes up against other teams, he's basically going against one other great player on those teams, and sometimes none. So yes, he does look incredibly dominant. But what if there were, if of almost every player on the team was like a superstar, or of some all-star level in some way? Would he then be as great? How well would he fare against a Western Conference team in the All-Star game that's composed of not just the four-headed beast that is the Golden State Warriors, but then also has Kyrie, LaMarcus Aldridge, or Kawhi Leonard, or James Harden, or Russell Westbrook, all on the same team? I don't know, man. I mean, I just feel like basketball is losing a sense of its competitiveness, a sense of its competition, a sense of his drive, his passion that made the sport what it was in the 90s. And speaking of basketball in the 90s, as many of you know, Charles Oakley, my apologies, was basically banned from MSG. He was basically banned due to what looked like on camera, or at least what the media had shown initially, well, was that he was drunk and apparently had gotten some kind of spat and then became physical, and security had to escort him out. Fine. Later, we learn that he actually had an argument with Dolan, the owner of the New York Knicks, and basically to the extent of, hey, Dolan, this team sucks. What are you gonna do to try to improve it? We gotta get the Knicks back to some type of reputable level, within the NBA world. And Dolan's re response was something to the effect of, "It's my team, so when you have enough money to matter," or something like that. Which, of course, as anyone would, Oakley took offense to, and things became a little more physical. So then Dolan proceeded then to ban him for life, indefinitely, from MSG, or from any Knicks games, right? So here's Charles Oakley, one of the most respected former Knicks players, right? During that time when Jordan was the Hercules. Correction, the Zeus of the NBA was just destroying teams left and right, and the battles between the Chicago Bulls and the New York Knicks will go down in NBA history as some of the roughest, most physical, most aggressive, most challenging battles in any even regular season games, even into playoffs. You banned him. You beat Oakley over a dispute. And then later, of course, we see in a couple of following Knicks games. Now, this is only just days after he banned Oakley from MSG or from Knicks games. We then see Dolan. Now, Oakley's black, okay? Dolan is white. Now, this is where it gets interesting. We see Dolan sitting with one former Knick who was so, unimportant to the team that I don't even remember his name, and then Latrell Sprewell. Now that tells you something. If I can remember Latrell Sprewell, but I can't remember the other guy at all. Sitting next to him, laughing it up. And we have not seen Latrell Sprewell take steps foot in MSG in years. Years. Okay? Now all of a sudden you ban Oakley and look who shows up, Sprewell. Out of nowhere. Laughing it up. Cheesing it up on the camera. It is just, and a lot of people just called them out on this. It was like, dude, how are you going to show up to hang out with Dolan, who clearly reached out to you to come to this game for this reason, okay? So that he can show the media and show the fans, hey, look, I'm cool with my players, and particularly, of course, you got to get two black former players. He's like, yeah, I'm cool with black people too, and you just hop on the opportunity. Like, how bad are you doing that you needed to actually just hop on this opportunity to just cheese it up in front of the camera with Dolan after he's just banned one of the best Knicks to play the game, or at least one of the most passionate. It was kind of disgusting. And then, of course, eventually Dolan rescinds the ban and, lets Oakley back into the games because he realized how silly it was initially, as most of the NBA had already thought. But just weeks later, we end up seeing Oakley at a Cavs game. The Cavs were playing against New York recently in Cleveland, and Oakley was there. There was no Dolan, but Oakley was there, and he was sitting next to, who do you think? Gilbert, Danny Gilbert, the owner of the Cleveland Cavaliers. So I don't know. There's a possibility that we could be seeing Oakley over there, in some ways helping the LeBron era keep its life. Speaking of further NBA interesting news, for those who follow the NBA trade deadline, which is another thing that seems to be getting more and more dull every year, as more and more players, and maybe this is due to the collective bargaining agreement that has them seeing up in the 200s of millions of dollars in contracts. Yes, 200s of millions. Chris Paul is reported to be expecting a contract worth $220 million over, I think, the next 4 years, 4 or 5 years. This is an amount of money that's unheard of, and the arguments have been made already about how it just feels like athletes are getting paid too much money to really do little compared to what benefits or what important roles teachers and doctors play. And I know many of you are like, well, doctors do make a really good amount of money. And this is true. Some doctors do, especially if you're a specialist. Surgeons and others of that nature do get paid really well. I'm not going to sit here and try to pretend like they don't. But on the average, I'm not too sure that for the work that doctors put in, that they're compensated completely well. I don't know. I know that you're counting how much debt that they got to rack up most of the time to even get to that point. It can get a little murky. But now, $220 million to dribble a ball up and down the court. And not just to dribble the ball up and down the court, folks, but it's also to potentially not even get into the playoffs or get a championship. And you're still going to get paid in contract money, $220 million. That's not even counting endorsements. That's absurd. That's absurd to me. I don't know many jobs where you can underperform, not deliver, not reach the goals that your boss, the owner of the team, the president of the team, so forth and so on, have set out for you, and still get paid that kind of money. It's I have to admit, man. I mean, it's a booming market right now to be a part of. But in those trade news, Boogie, aka DeMarcus Cousins, was traded to the New Orleans Pelicans, which was a great move for the Pelicans. They got a top class center. A little off kilter mentally, but the guy is a double-double machine, averaging about 20 points, 27 points, and about 12 or 13 rebounds a game. But the big issue was how it unraveled, how it unfolded this trade, because it happened during the All-Star game, and there was a constant communication between the Boogie and management that they were not going to trade him, that they were behind him 100%, and they even publicly said this about him, only for him to find out, kind of secretly, obviously, after the trade had already been done, that he had been traded. So he didn't even know that he was being shopped. And there's always this argument about loyalty when it comes to these things, particularly sporting teams and players. Where does the loyalty lie? Should the player be loyal to the franchise? Is the franchise to be loyal to the player? Because in the end, it is business. But there still should be a level of respect and a level of openness that's between the players and the management. Because, yeah, it is a business choice to trade somebody, especially if there's someone that you kind of feel culturally doesn't represent what you want your franchise to represent, no matter how much money it is that they're bringing in. Because let's be honest, Boogie was bringing in a lot of money. But, and he also did tons for the community. So funny enough, the community loved him. So the community outside of the team loved him, but apparently it was just the players that didn't like him. But now you trade him random, like kind of su surprisingly and unexpectedly, and then just talk about character, kind of like bashing him after you traded him when you've been lying to his face and to the media for days. Now, is there something that should happen to management? Should management be re should face some repercussions for that? And it starts to make you wonder, how are players actually seen? Are they really seen as players, as people, or are they actually just seen as livestock, as the choice bull, the choice cow, the choice, whatever, chicken, whatever animal is being used for the purpose of producing a product that generates income. And maybe there needs to be a little more understanding in that, because it seems like the more and more that this goes out of control, the more and more that they'll be able to make the money that they're making. But also, I feel more and more the product itself, the NBA product, is going to keep declining, losing some of what made it as great of a of an event as it's always been. So now, a lot of teams didn't make any trades. Boston didn't make any trades. The Knicks tried to dump Melo. Nobody was taking that. And they were trying to dump Rose. Nobody was taking it. With Rose making $25 million in the next year and looking for a contract extension, and with Melo making, I think, 25 the next two years, so like 50 mil to 75 mil. The Knicks have put themselves into a grave. It's going to be hard for them to really get out and really start to build upon creating some type of new image for themselves. So they're kind of in a hole, which I'm not surprised by. But we all thought that with the new management coming along of Phil Jackson, that would have started a rebuild, a resurrection, if you will. But apparently, it hasn't. The Knicks are still terrible. And funny enough, for the first time, honestly, Phil Jackson seems to be out of sorts talking to the media about his star players. And it's funny because, from my recollection, my memory, he's always been comfortable talking about Kobe, talking about Paul Gasol, talking about Fisher, talking about Mike, for those who don't know, Michael Jordan, talking about Scottie, Rodman. But when it came to talking about Melo, I mean, maybe honestly, he just doesn't believe Melo is as great as Melo thinks he is. And it's starting to settle in his mind, and he's starting to realize that maybe Melo just doesn't have that oomph, that spark that has made all those other players that he's coached as great as they were. But unlike the Lakers, who were fortunate enough to get Magic Johnson to come in and take over as president of operations, basketball operations for the Lakers now, And he's now started like an immediate rebuild, which is great because I think he's kind of looked at what the Celtics did, and is trying to kind of follow the Danny Ainge blueprint. The Knicks, unfortunately, don't have that option, and they're probably going to sit in the mire for another 2 or 3 years. So for all you Knicks fans out there, get lots of Kleenex and get ready just to cry every season. Because they're gonna suck for a long time. Another funny thing in news that I thought was interesting, and also just made me just think about how our present society is structured, or how it's, or the emotional or mental maturity of our present society. Because we often talk about how intelligent the kids are now, and how much more advanced they seem to be when they're very young compared to the generations for them. So in the news, there's this kid. He's 14 years old, down in Florida, and he made a list called, I think, the Kill List, for his high school peers, of which most of them were football, or were the school's football team. And this list, basically, obviously by this name, was a list of students that he wanted to shoot. Yes, we're still having this issue of kids wanting to shoot other kids. Okay. And it's probably over bullying. So when the media reached out to his family to get an idea, to of where this could have come from, and why, what was the point of the list and so forth, his family said that he got it from watching wrestling. It's a character on there called Chris Jericho, who has a list where he puts people that he doesn't like on there constantly and makes idle threats, but I'm sorry, I mean, maybe I was personalizing it, but I sat back, I started thinking about this, and I was like, well, when I was 14 years old, first of all, I didn't have any celebrity or TV role models. There was nobody that I modeled my life and behavior after. Now, of course, as a kid, you have your favorite characters from programs, that you watch, and you may, emulate some of their behavior jokingly. Okay, everybody does that. But there's no character that I've sat and said, you know what? That's a great idea. I'm gonna go and, do a backflip off of a table. I could never understand kids who would do this. And for a long time, WWE now, well, it's been WWE for a while, had to keep putting out warnings to kids before the start of the program, and sometimes after a commercial, to tell them that these are professionals and that they shouldn't try this at home. What? Who in their mind seeing somebody jump off of a ladder is going, you know what? That looks completely safe. Oh, he just jumped off a ladder, it's 15 feet high, and fell through a table. No, that's completely logical. Like, what? And it was like, all right, you know what? We were in a different era of youth. It was more aggressive, more challenging in the physical sense. So, okay, it makes total, maybe that's what's happening. But to hear a 14-year-old now who's following a character on a wrestling show, and that's the excuse for making a list to shoot people, the kid is 14, okay? He understands that wrestling is fake. And if his ass at 14 cannot discern that wrestling is not real, then there's something wrong. His parents need to sit down with him and go over the actualities of life, okay? All right, that's number one. But okay, fine. Let's say that he's one of those kids that follows the wrestling world like that and believes in its fantasy. Fine. It still doesn't explain to me how he takes a list of names, okay? That nothing ever happens to them, okay? Then because it's just Chris Jericho character. This is a heel or villain in wrestling terms. So, if anything happens to any of these people, it's like, maybe they get beat up, maybe they get like a special move done, or they don't get invited to like corny parties or something like that. But how do you commute that to shooting? Like, and it just makes you wonder how far from the realization of what death means is each generation, each new teenager becoming. Because I'm thinking back when I was a teenager, and the thought of just jumping to killing people was a huge leap. Like, if you start thinking like that, like, if that was where your mind went initially, you were immediately put into like a counseling session because it just was too extreme. Yeah, maybe you want to beat them up, maybe you want to throw something at them, but you want to kill these people now? And they're kids too? And then it also just makes us wonder about, makes me wonder about how these kids are being taught, at home. Because I was always told, and I feel like maybe many of you too, were always given a constant talking to or a constant reminder that there was a future, that whatever you're experiencing now, be it bullying, be it, some level of picking on, was temporary. And then some years, maybe even in months, it would pass over, that there wasn't this dire need to end it on that level. And it just kind of like lost me. It seems like so many parents are leaving the idolization of their of that leads to the development of their child's behavior and the way that their child thinks. They're leaving that to television and the celebrity world, and it's kind of worrisome, especially with a man like Trump running office now, who kind of is a personality. He's kind of like watching a reality TV show personality running the country. And it kind of makes you wonder what the rest of these quote, these more less less liberal, less socially advanced parts of the country are seeing in teaching their kids. Now, speaking of Trump, I have to dabble in the Trump crazy that I've been trying to avoid, and I think many of us have been trying to avoid, but to be honest, Trump is just like an infestation of roaches, man. It's hard to just avoid, sometimes you think that they're not there, that everything's kind of like, getting to some level of normalcy, then bam, freaking crazy, things that he does just pop up out of nowhere, when the lights are on. So there's a CPAC, which is a basically a CPAC, which is a committee that's organized by these people who are conservatives, and it's kind of a way for them to raise money to get special speakers to come in to talk about the ways that they can kind of begin to move forward their conservative agendas. All right, and they're having a rally today, in which they had a couple of people that were listed to be guest speakers. One of them is Richard Spencer, who is a alt-right extremist, white supremacist, and sexist, of course, bigot, and all these other appropriate terms that fit into those logics, and who was a very staunch supporter of the Trump campaign, and even so far as chanted at one of the previous rallies during the campaign trail, when Trump was still running for office, chanted saying that Trump was their guy, he's one of them, and he's going to return the world the right of their people back to them in a basic sense of the wording. And he's one of the people who believes in an all-white state, basically that only whites should be in America. Now, the CPAC, okay, was okay with him, all right, and apparently so was Trump, for a while. But CPAC has started to push away because they don't want to be affiliated with white supremacists. Which is weird to me because in the age of technology, the age of technology where you can Google anything and find out anything on anyone, why would you be okay with him being a white supremacist? Clearly, because you knew who he was. It's not like you didn't know who he was when you invite him out to this. And there's been affiliation between the two entities for years. So you knew what he was about from the beginning. But you were cool with it then, but now you're not. And it's a similar thing with Milo Yiannopoulos, which I'm probably saying his name wrong, but he's the self-hating homosexual who also hates, who was also sexist and probably racist. Has said numerous incendiary things about homosexuality, about his own homosexuality, and about women, amongst other people, clearly, and Muslims and others. And is the editor, or one of the editors for the Breitbart, which is an alt-right, alternative right publication that Steve Bannon and some others also have supported and know about. So Milo, who also was a guest speaker, was also banned or rejected or uninvited or disinvited or uninvited or disinvited to this CPAC rally. In Milo's case, it's also just another testament to just I don't want to not understanding how these organizations want people to believe how they don't represent these things, but then you only make the decisions to step away from your affiliation with these questionable or disgusting people and other entities only when other people call you out on it. So Milo, who they already knew was a sexist, okay? He says the most inappropriate and demeaning things about women. Who already knew that he was a self-hating homosexual because he bashes his own homosexuality as well as other homosexuals. You want him to come and speak, okay, at your conference, at your rally, all right? So you already know what he's about because that's what his whole celeb quote unquote celebrity is based on. But you only speak out when it becomes an issue about some other comments he makes. So recently, he made comments and what people call sympathetic comments about having sex with young boys. And then makes a joke or a passing joke about his own sexual experience as a young boy with a priest. Of course, this explodes, right? And this becomes the impetus for the CPAC committee and probably for many other organizations, particularly Simon and Schuster, who were going to publish Milo's book called Dangerous. I believe that was supposed to be coming out this year. They've now dropped his contract due to this behavior. And it kind of raises a double question because on one hand it raises the question, well, you already knew what he was about. Why would you still promote it? But then it also then raises the question of how much of the publicity, the media, and our as a nation, our consumption of of it is promoting people like Milo, promoting people like Richard Spencer to exist. Because if you think about it, and this even goes back to the girl that I didn't even know about, but I had saw recently on a Dr. Phil YouTube. Yes, I did Google this on YouTube, and I did search it up on YouTube to find a video for Dr. Phil of the girl that started to cash me outside, how about that phrase that she's kind of allowed to explode into this meme, frenzy. So the girl was on Dr. Phil as one of the crazy teenagers, one of those stupid episodes where they're basically trying to talk to and reform in some way some crazed teenager that's living out of control apparently, but still has never really been to prison, never been shot, stabbed, but just living out of control, whatever. So she's on the show. There's tons of talk. She does the cash me outside, how about that nonsense. That blows up, and the next thing you know, I'm reading that she's doing photo shoots now for modeling. And it all ties in, I promise you, into the idea of just how much are we promoting this and giving the impression that this is okay and letting this become what it is, to where people like Milo can make thousands of dollars. Okay, the common person is helping to support this person who's brandishly saying things that maybe they don't even believe in, that they don't even support, to the benefit of their own wallet. And could possibly be inciting other types of behavior. And it gives a very true image of our American culture and what we actually are standing for. And I mean, yes, I mean, people can be like, well, Mike, look at President Trump. We've elected him in. So that's a clear indication that we are all just concerned with our own values, our own wants being met. And this is true, but it's a telling thing when we can look and just see how even hate is being promoted as a way for someone to be successful. Well, I'm sitting back here drinking a Pabst, and it feels like that's the end of my time here in the Warriston. So, hope you liked my one-on-one chat. I'd love to hear back from you guys. Shoot me an email at theawarradioshow@gmail.com. And until then, enjoy your weekend.
I am the walrus. Mr. City Policeman sitting pretty.